from runasradio.com. You're listening to Run As Radio, the internet audio talk show for IT professionals with Richard Campbell and Greg Hughes. This is Carl Franklin introducing show number 45 with guest Adam Kogan, recorded Friday, February 8th, 2008. Run As Radio is brought to you each week by Quap Productions, providing professional media and podcasting services online at pwop.com.
You're listening to Run As Radio. I'm your host, Richard Campbell. With me, as always, my co-host, Greg Hughes.
Hey, everybody. How's it going today?
Things are good, man. Just plunking along.
Down to the land of Oz today.
Yeah, well, you know, we always got to do an odd one once in a while, and a very interesting topic, too.
Well, with a good guy and an all-around good guy and a smart guy as well, we haven't touched on exchange for a couple of shows, so, you know, no time like the present.
And if you've got any show ideas, let us know at info@runasradio.com. All right, Greg, let's introduce our guest. Adam Kogan is the chief architect at SSW, a Microsoft certified partner specializing in Office and .NET solutions. At SSW, Adam has been developing custom solutions for businesses across a range of industries such as government, banking, insurance, and manufacturing since 1990 for clients such as Microsoft, Quicken, and the Fisheries Research and Development Corporation. Welcome, Adam.
Hello, Richard.
Well, and of course, we can't hide the fact we've been friends for, 12 years now, I think?
It's been a while.
And we went to Kilimanjaro together. I seem to recall I got to the top.
Oh, I was waiting for that one. You started off slow, Rich, but you never stopped.
Oh, no. I'm not real fast. That's true. But my feet keep moving.
That's right.
You went to Kilimanjaro with Adam, and I went to lunch with Adam.
I have done a mountain since. You'll be impressed. I did Mount Kinabalu. In Malaysia. So
cool.
Yeah, I've done something this year.
Well, and you also got to the top of Fuji, and I was with my family when we went there, and I turned around with them, and you went all the way to the top. So
that's right.
Let me call that out. Adam Kogan's been at the top of Fuji, and I haven't.
There's no competition going on in this relationship.
Oh, no, not a bit. Not a bit. If I mentioned I'm better looking than Adam, too.
Oh, my. So, do we have a topic?
The show, right. The show. Right. So, the reason we ended up together here was really talking about the way that Adam, you and SSW, have really taken a shine to analyzing Exchange in a serious way. And I thought it was an interesting topic to talk to an IT audience about. Reporting against Exchange is not an obvious thing. So maybe we should just get to the top of that. Why would you want to report on Exchange?
Well, I guess it comes down to there's some good data in there. I actually, run a company, and I'm, always looking for how to measure people. I think there's an old saying: if you can't measure it, you can't improve it.
Right.
Or if you can measure it, then you can manage it and you can improve it more. So I started off, and I just did what I'd learnt from the accounting days, and I was just looking at P&Ls and balance sheets, and then the obvious types of reports started being made, which were measuring, who are the best billers, who are the best salesmen. Those type of reporting on sales figures are extremely common. And since I've got a lot of developers, I started doing reports on, we have an exception manager in every single one of our applications, which logs every bug that we do.
Right.
Every customer. So I started measuring exceptions. And then I started looking at all types of KPIs that might be interesting to measure to see which ones are important and which ones aren't. So then I had a whole series of them, like billable time and product sales for the salespeople, and I had number of phone conversations each one was having. That was from our phone system. And so I was just doing reports on, how many new customers different people we're speaking to and how many existing customers other guys were speaking to. Some developers use the phone a lot, some people don't. And then it got on to, well, who's sending the most emails? And who's sending the most emails to customers? Who's sending the most emails internally? And who's sending the most emails in total, you know, to including personal emails.
So different kinds of email volume as a key performance indicator. How did you apply that? I'm kind of curious how did you find that it actually related to the performance and the work that the people were doing?
I actually brought it up once at my user group, and forever they've always called it the Kogan measure to measure how many emails people are sent as a correlation of who's the hardest working.
Uh-huh.
Obviously, it's a bit of a joke.
Because, sure.
You can be sending yourself a lot of sending a lot of jokes or a lot of emails to yourself and that type of thing. But we have a number of rules around that in our company about when you send an email and when you don't. And you know, you've got to be very careful in all this stuff because you don't want to, you know, be putting up on, you know, making it very clear that this is the most important thing. I just think it's another rounded way of potentially getting some KPIs that are useful for the business.
So it's not the only measure, it's just one of the measures. But I got to think, when you looked at your folks that were very productive, there was sort of a signature of how they communicated, whether it be by phone or by email, that sort of indicated this is the behavior of somebody who's being very productive.
That's right. Are very, even if you have a phone call with a customer and the customer rings up our developer, they always then send an email to themselves. It's a little bit weird because you're kind of talking to yourself, and new employees have to get adjusted to this thing. They've got to be talking to themselves, which is basically they send an email and they say, you know, as per my conversation, Richard, this is what you want me to do, this, this, and this. And as you know, with developers, they often get it wrong. So that's your chance, the customer's chance, to say, hey, that's not exactly what I wanted, or, you know, to correct it.
So you convert all telephone conversations into email that way?
Yes, which is, you know, then turns into a task.
It's an interesting approach that, I mean, I think a lot of people do this naturally too, that they tend to direct their workflow through Outlook so that Outlook becomes their view to their work.
Yeah, that's right.
In fact, I think Microsoft with their CRM product has, you know, an Outlook connector, because a lot of that documentation of the phone calls or the activity does happen in email, to be able to tag emails, for example, or a thread of emails and connect them to a CRM call.
Yeah, we're actually using CRM for,
uh-huh.
and Outlook is their rich client if you want an offline client or a rich client.
Yeah.
So you've gone so far as to actually make a product now that SSW sells that does analytics against Exchange.
Yes, we do. So we looked at this problem. We were actually working on this problem with Microsoft, and they wanted some. They have a whole series of reporting packs, and we did a couple of their packs that they have, which basically was done for the reporting services team, but they wanted, in the early days, to show that you could use reporting services against lots of different products of the Microsoft range. They did some reports on IIS and I think it was Great Plains and Navision, the one against Exchange. And there was a couple of other packs for the financial applications. And so initially we did the reports directly against SQL, because you can query SQL. It has a way that you can access the data via you can basically query the EDB file, because Exchange is essentially JetBlue.
Right.
Yeah, you can query that with SQL syntax. It's a little bit different. You select the fields and then you select the scope. So you've got to say whether you want to do a shallow traversal or a deep traversal. But through that exercise, we essentially found that Exchange is a bit of a dog to query. To get data out of it, you'll see that not many people do it, and that's because it's extremely slow.
Yeah, from a performance standpoint, there's a lot of pain.
And it's, you know, it's organized in a different way for a different purpose. It's a messaging system, not a querying system.
Right. It's not certainly not optimized for that.
Yeah. Well, it's just if you're used to SQL, you don't get SQL. That's you don't get the performance.
Right.
And it's not as easy to query. So then we went along to solve that problem, and we essentially created a Windows service that moved all the exchange data into a SQL database in a nice queryable form, just with, you know, basically relational tables. So you can do quick reports on it, like seeing who's got the biggest inboxes, who's sent the most emails to customers, who sent the most emails internally, et cetera.
Do you actually take the whole body in the mail as well, or are you just talking about the sort of info around the mail?
Well, we take it's basically a checkbox in the Windows service. We have a little GUI. It looks very much like the old 2005 little tray icon that SQL Server had. So you've got a few options in there where you can, whether you want to take the message or not. Obviously, taking the message makes your SQL database much bigger, makes the extraction time every night bigger.
Right.
Right.
So you mentioned the KPIs that you were computing, but I don't think we actually defined which ones they were. What are the more relevant measures that you get from Exchange?
Oh, well, you can see, you know, which people you're sending the most to. You can see which guys are sending the biggest emails. You know, it's not uncommon even for experienced, you know, more senior people to turn up and start sending 20 meg emails. And if you get a report fairly quickly, you know, early feedback's good. If you get a report showing that, you know, the biggest emails that have been sent out this week are these, you just tell the guy to delete it from his mailbox. Some people learn this fairly quickly if they've got mailbox limits. In our company, we don't have we have monster mailboxes, so we don't have those limits, but we certainly have backup issues.
Sure.
Right. Rather than just setting hard limits for how big your mailbox can be and then having people try to wrestle their way around that, let it be bigger, but keep an eye on how it's growing and manage it carefully.
That's right, yeah. So if you do take all the text, you can obviously search full text. However, there are other ways of searching emails. SharePoint 2007 is one option.
Right.
That'll search public folders. But if you want to be able to search subordinates' emails, that's not going to be an easy one. But the main thing that people want to do is they want to be able to query it in lots of different ways. A common one that we do is that in the tool, you give it a connection string to your CRM system, be it often it's an internal homegrown SQL Server application,
right.
Or you might be using CRM, which is a SQL database as well. And they want all those emails in the corporate database. So those people, you're not sending, you know, lots of emails to people that aren't in your corporate database. You might have corporate communications that you send out, like email spams, that type of thing.
Right. I can also see the power of being able to have a common view of all contact with a customer, independent of any given sender.
Yeah, sometimes a client calls up and he says that I spoke to someone here.
Right.
And this is just like you might, like in our company, you can query who, you know, which people you've been calling from the phone system. You might want to know Pfizer have I called? Who here at SSW has spoken to anyone at Pfizer, so you can query across all mailboxes with just an efficient SQL statement.
And certainly a whole discovery angle on potential liability, on, you know, determining contact levels, who's doing what work for whom. I mean, you have a very empirical set of data when a customer is complaining to say you've been contacted by these people on these times.
Yes, yeah, for sure. It should be noted, like there's lots of types of reports you can do once you've got all this type of stuff, but you've got to be fairly careful about how you're going to inform the employees what you're doing. And you got to be careful. Like, I guess I have been in companies where they've, you know, they've got TFS and they can see who's writing the most lines of code.
Right.
And obviously putting up a report on the fridge showing the developers who wrote the most lines of code last week is potentially going to have a change in behavior.
Well, this is what you said right up front. That which is measured can be adjusted. So now if that which you communicate outward is ultimately setting value on it. If I decide that I'm going to throw on the fridge, so to speak, that the KPI, the most lines of code, is celebrated, I'm really just sending the message to my developers, write more code.
That's right.
And that's not necessarily a good thing.
No, it's not necessarily a good thing. And that's why you got to be careful. It's just one in a number of measures. But I was actually talking once at the user group about the wall effect of different things, because I'm an advocate of having a report on who's writing the most unit tests. Obviously, that still has a negative, that you can have guys writing unnecessary unit tests, but the main thing at the moment is most developers aren't writing unit tests at all.
Right.
So this is encouraging them to at least be trying to put more and more unit tests in their application. Similar with some of these things about who's churning through the most emails, who's sending the most emails, that type of stuff can have an effect on the way they work, and whether it's a productive thing has got to be carefully looked at. I think there's something called the Hawthorne effect. Have you ever heard of this one?
I don't know if I've heard it that way, but I have a guess of what it is. But go right ahead. Tell us the story.
Yeah, I think the Hawthorne effect is when they first were trying to measure, I think it was in the 1920s, about it was believed that if you gave the workers more light, which obviously costs money, they were more productive. So they decided what they would do is tell this big factory that they were going to increase the lighting, and they measured the two different factories. I think these measurements went on for 3 years. And the interesting thing was that one factory got the increase in lighting and the other factory didn't. And both groups increased in production. And they said, what the hell is going on here? So obviously they were curious. And so they decided what they would do is they would decrease the lighting, see if they could save some money on one group. And so they told them that they were measuring their productivity, but they didn't exactly say what they were going to do, but they gradually were decreasing the lighting on one of the factories. And the interesting thing was that both groups were increasing in capacity, in their production capacity again. And they thought, this is bizarre, because they were under the impression that if only an increase in lighting would increase production capacity. And this kept going until one of the factories just shut up shop and processed and went up and wouldn't come back to work because it got so dark.
But and really, it was this whole idea that the fact that you let the workers know you're observing performance gives a short-term improvement in performance.
That's right, yeah. And the interesting thing is that you picked up the short-term. It is a short term. As long as people know they're being measured, they will always increase in productivity around that area. And yes, but the main thing that they've worked out, that this change is short term. And the funny thing is, you don't even have to be measuring anything. They only think you are measuring it.
Right.
Yeah. So you just have to install a camera and saying you're looking at, you're watching for who's being late, and that you might not be doing anything. But the mere fact that they think that, they change straight away.
Right. And this really feeds back into your whole concept of, if we're measuring these things, then ultimately we can improve them. But the improvement process is about how you communicate them to the folks that are being measured.
Correct. Yeah.
And you want to be measuring something that has meaning, you know, from in the real world, obviously, you know, that just because you can measure it doesn't necessarily mean that it's something that's useful or that you can actually apply to make improvement.
Yeah, that's right. I just had this situation 2 weeks ago where I'd just been at a company and they were just complaining about their Facebook usage in their company. They had a number of issues. but that was one of them. And I came back and I did a query on our ISA box to see who our biggest Facebook users were. And I just happened to mention to two guys, hey, you two are the biggest Facebook users in the company. And I was speaking to one last night, and he said he hasn't been back to Facebook because he thought I was watching him.
Well, and you weren't necessarily saying, and that's bad. You just said, I happen to notice this.
Yeah, but he obviously thought that might not be a good thing, or he thought, hang on, is Adam looking at all the traffic we're going to? But they actually say, I think in that Hawthorne effect, that the important thing is to change things. Maybe just change the office hours to an hour earlier for a month and then change it back. And you know, the interesting thing is when you change it back to the original variable it was at, the productivity is higher than when it was prior. So just doing something else and changing it back to what it is, you get an increase in productivity.
It's a strange thing, and interesting ideas that just by having these KPIs and communicating in different ways, we're going to impact performance.
That's right, yeah. It's good to measure as much as you can. Like, I think that, I know you're a big fan of cubes and business intelligence, Richard, and, I think and obviously Microsoft is starting to go this way. A great example was the TFS installation automatically installs a cube and keeps it up to date. And
right.
It's got lots of really hot measures. They're great things to look at, tests, build times, all this stuff. And I have a bit of a dream that you're going to install the next version of ISA, which, as you know, I'm not very happy with because it doesn't install on Windows 2008.
No.
And, you install the next version of ISA and you get a cube with it. Install the next version of IIS, you get a nice cube with it, that type of thing.
So bit by bit, we're seeing that all of Microsoft's products are going to start adopting this KPI point of view where you're going to be able to analyze the data that flows through it.
Yeah, it'd be great to see, if the BI team started consistently implementing nice ways of getting access to their data so that they've all got different ways of accessing the raw data, but to access the summary data, which is what you're after, we are eventually going to end up with an nice, consistent way of doing that via analysis services.
Well, that's going to impact you ultimately. I mean, you've done all the legwork here to make the Exchange Reporter work. And now if they really were to do that for Exchange, why would we need your product?
Oh, well, I wouldn't mind. First of all, if they did do that, they'd be doing it with a cube. And if that does the job, or, with the new performance point and stuff, if that does the job, great. If you want to get down to drilling down to the actual number of records underneath a measure, as an example, you might say, I've sent 50 emails to an unknown person. If you want to be able to double-click on that, you're eventually going to get down to the source. Now, with Exchange the way it is now, that's not going to be a fast enough way. You're going to need to have a SQL database of all those records so you can just get into that. So one of the best things about our product is the technology it uses is that it's using reporting services and people can write easy reports against SQL data. In the future, at the moment, you can write reports against cube data with MDX statements and an MDX designer, but it's certainly not as easy for most people to do as it is with SQL.
So, yeah, ultimately, being able to have access to all the data is going to make a big difference for folks, and they could do more. Cubes are an interesting thing because while they're certainly great to drill into what you have, if they don't cover a particular measure that you care about, they're really not going to help you much.
No, that's right. And that's why we need the quintessential, beautiful MDX designer to help people around. We've got a nice one that comes inside Performance Point. It's just pretty limited. You can't say do top 20 and things like that. Some obvious.
You must be paying close attention to what's coming with SQL 2008 then.
SQL 2008. I really don't. There's some great things coming with SQL 2008, obviously geospatial and and table valued variables and things. But the main thing we really need is client side tools. We need a nice way to be able to get access to our cubes to make them completely mainstream. At this point in time, we've got Bill Baker over in the SQL team doing it, or actually, what is he, in the performance point team now?
Right.
Doing a good job trying to make the tools accessible to everybody and nice and easy to use. And I think that, you know, that's all coming. But I really think that the client-side tools are the main thing. SQL's a great product.
Well, I think the acquisition of ProClarity is going to have a huge impact on that too.
Yeah, I could be wrong, but I think that's one of Microsoft's biggest gambles to take ProClarity. And at this point in time, I believe about 80% of that functionality is in Performance Point version 1. And the next version of Performance Point will be the one that has, you know, the whole kit and caboodle of ProClarity, which will mean that the whole investment's been absorbed. I was really upset when I saw Microsoft, what was that product they bought? I think it was called Panorama, and they turned into Data Analyzer.
Right.
I was so excited by that product. I thought, wow, everyone's going to have this, and finally we're going to have somebody, you know, it was a beautiful, simple UI, very limited, but allowed you to look at cubes and see the biggest records and double-click on those and drill down. And they abandoned it.
Yeah, it's funny how, of course, we don't know the inside story as to what actually happened there, but sometimes products don't come to fruition.
No, they don't. It was like an orphan in the office team. My understanding is that they put, like, the best part about it was the data bars, the way that it didn't really show you the numbers, it just showed you big bars of which the big figures were, and that's been moved into the Excel team, into the data bars.
Yeah, so they grabbed the best bit, and the product itself sort of vanished.
Yeah, that's right. But Excel isn't really a cube explorer. It's more a cube analyzer. But I think that's the way that Microsoft want to go. They want you to be using Excel, and it kind of makes some sense, but it's just, and there's still a missing picture of that cube explorer. Just to quickly look at, you know, a cube and not know what it is and be able to just look through and see stuff.
Right. So what's next for Exchange Reporter for you?
Well, it's Exchange 2007 support. There's a few ways of getting data from Exchange today, and obviously we wrote this on the 2000 product, and it's currently running on the 2003 version of Exchange. And we had to look at all the different ways we were going to do this, and we essentially abandoned the way of accessing data from the Exchange box itself. And we looked at the different APIs, and the different APIs are a CDO, WebDAV, and something called XOLADB. And you're not going to believe it. Well, I'll just explain those to you just so you understand what they do. But CDO is the old way of getting access to every piece of Exchange data. You can get everything. You can get all the attachments of an email, all this stuff, but it requires COM interop, and it's quite a heavy overhead. So what they introduced was something called XOLADB, which basically worked with normal record sets, and all it was, as far as, you know, you could do this just by changing the connection string to be an Exchange connection string, and it was just using like normal ADO. In our case, we're using ADO.NET, but the problem with that was it has to run on the Exchange box. And, you know, you can see people like Greg, you know, Exchange administrators would not want this running on the Exchange box.
Probably
and
not.
So the other method of accessing was something called WebDAV, which is extension to HTTP to do stuff on the server side. The problem with all that is that the only one that was really fast was the XOLADB. And these methods have been depreciated in Exchange 2007.
Ugh.
And what they've done is they've introduced this web services layer, and they've made it 64-bit as well, although that's not a big hassle. And so that part has to be potentially rewritten unless we're going to carry on with the deprecated features.
Interesting challenge. So we're going to have to wait a little while to see what the 2007 version looks like.
Yeah, that's right. Well, it probably won't be that far away.
Cool. So where did we send folks to see more?
They can probably Google Exchange Reporter.
And if anybody hasn't figured out yet, Adam's an Aussie.
And you wish you were one, don't you, Rich? Does anyone know you're a Kiwi?
I think most folks know I was actually born in New Zealand, but I just don't sound like it.
No, you kind of sound American, actually.
It's odd, isn't it? All right, Adam, thanks very much for coming on the show. Appreciate your insights into the products.
Thanks for taking the time.
Okay, no problem.
And we'll talk to you next week on Run As Radio.